All right. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Nebraska is now open for the transaction of business. Draw nigh, all ye having business with this honorable court, and ye shall be heard. God save the state of Nebraska and this honorable court.
Thank you. You may be seated. And good morning to everyone. We will begin with introductions from the court. I am Mike Havikin, the Chief Justice, and now, by order of seniority, as to service on the court, the other members of the court will introduce themselves.
Good morning. I'm Lindsay Miller-Lerman.
William Castle. Good morning.
Stephanie Stacy. Good morning.
Good morning. I am Jeff Funk.
Jonathan Tappick.
Good morning.
John Frydenberg.
Thank you, members of the court. Our first case of the day, then, is Blyke versus Blyke. Counsel, you may take your places at council table. Mr. MacArthur, good morning to you. And Mr. Ferguson, good morning to you.
Thank you.
Do either council have any questions before we begin?
No, sir. No, sir.
Then, Mr. MacArthur, you may approach and you may proceed.
May it please the court, my name is Brett MacArthur. I represent the appellant, Carmen Blyke, in this matter. I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. This case arises out of a divorce action which was initially filed by the appellee, Mr. Blyke, in Venezuela. That case was pursued to a decree which was entered in 2015. Subsequent to that, in 2021, my client, the appellant, Mrs. Blyke, filed a divorce action against the appellee in Lancaster County District Court. That was in 2021. Shortly after filing our complaint, we propounded some discovery, which was never answered for the reason that Mr. Blyke, the appellee, filed a motion to dismiss, which was heard about 2 months after filing the complaint.
What were the statutory grounds for the motion to dismiss?
There was already a decree and that the parties were not legally married, and I can't cite the statute for that.
Was the motion to dismiss based on Rule 12b-1, Rule 12b-2, and Rule 12b-6?
I don't believe it was one of those, Your Honor. I think it was that the parties were not legally married.
Well, then connect that, if you will, for me, to a ground, a permissible ground to dismiss the complaint.
Well, we don't think that it was permissible. Frankly, I know that there was a statute cited, and I can look quickly if the court wants me to. It's in the order and in the motion, but I don't remember off the top of my head. I just know that the judge said these parties are not married and that they were going to recognize the Venezuelan decree.
Thank you.
To what extent, if any, did your client participate in proceedings in Venezuela?
Well, that's kind of the heart of our argument. So the record reflects that she was not personally served. The record reflects that there was publication, I think, in a newspaper in Venezuela, and that something was left at her last known address. She never personally appeared in court. She did not submit any evidence. That's borne out in the decree. She attempted to submit a protection order, and she had what was called an ad litem attorney representing her. I don't know what the term ad litem would have meant within the context of their civil proceedings, but that was the term that was used. So it's clear that she had some sort of representation, but it's not clear from the record that she was ever noticed for any hearings or that she had any opportunity to participate in any meaningful way. The record is pretty sparse. It's simply contained largely of a recitation of facts, which I believe were submitted by the appellee. So
if the record showed that she had hired the attorney who appeared on her behalf, what effect do you think that would have, if any?
Well, I think that that is a fact, but I don't think it's dispositive. Yeah, it's hard for me to characterize the weight of that fact because we don't know if there was any litigation. We don't know if there was any discovery. We don't know what the communications were between the ad litem attorney. We don't really know what an ad litem attorney is. I assume it's some sort of legal representative. But to try to be responsive to your question, we don't know what sort of notice Ms. Blyke would have had. We don't know what the procedures would have been for her to request an in-person court hearing, to be present in court, and to rebut the allegations that were set forth by the appellee.
You don't quarrel, do you, that if your client had actually actively participated in the proceedings in Venezuela, that she would be bound by the outcome of those proceedings?
I think that the only caveat I would say to that would be that if she had participated, if she had gone to court, if she had been afforded an opportunity to present evidence and to conduct discovery and to know the marital estate and to have a meaningful opportunity to get her fair share of whatever that estate is, I think that at that point our argument is simply, is the decree unconscionable? I think there would still be that test.
Suppose she had participated, but not on the issues of property. Suppose that she had filed an answer and said, I agree, marriage is broken, or whatever the standard in Venezuela is, I want to be divorced, and the Venezuelan court said, you're divorced. In exactly the same circumstances otherwise that we now are here, what would be the status of jurisdiction of a court in the state of Nebraska in the United States over the marriage?
I think we start over, because I think that the decree does not meet the standards that we would expect for comity, because we don't have a division of assets. Other aspects would have been met, her ability to participate, her ability to have been served personally or entered her appearance. But I think that, you know, as within the Weber case, clearly in that case, the wife who is the respondent, defendant, had an attorney. Clearly she had a chance to participate. She signed a property settlement agreement. She was given something, and the court found that that did not meet the test for conscionability, and the decree was not recognized from the Dominican Republic in that case. In this case, I think the facts are even more egregious in that there was no personal service and that my client essentially received nothing. So.
Counsel, is there any dispute in the record that the parties were initially married in Omaha on March 8th of 2003 and then subsequently married in Venezuela on March 11th, 2003?
I don't think there's a dispute about those facts.
We have the Venezuelan decree in our record, correct?
Correct.
And it, the translated version of that decree, dissolves the marriage of March 11th, 2003, makes no mention of the marriage of March 8th, 2003. What impact, if any, does that have?
You know, I don't know how to sort that out. It seems that...
How do you think we should sort that out?
Well, I think if I had to come up with an answer, I would think that we had to say, was the second marriage a marriage?
What's the answer to that under our law?
I think it's not a marriage.
What's the answer to that under Venezuelan law?
I don't know.
How did the issue of the validity of the Venezuelan decree become the issue before the court on this motion to dismiss? How did the validity become the focus?
Excuse me. I think what became a focus was when we filed our complaint, the defendant said, we're already divorced. We're not legally married. And so it was brought by a motion to dismiss.
Is that an affirmative defense?
I think the court found it was jurisdictional, and that there was no
subject matter. Help me understand that. What's the jurisdictional failure if the parties on this record?
Well, I think that if I understand what you're saying is then we ought to say you divorced, you dissolved a marriage that really was not legally binding in the first place. That it would have been the original marriage that would have been binding, and so therefore you could argue, I suppose, the Venezuelan decree has no effect because it dissolved a marriage that was not legal because there was a pre-existing marriage.
Was that argument presented below?
No, it was not.
So what was the jurisdictional argument that was made below?
The jurisdictional argument that was made below was that the parties were not married, that they were already divorced, that the plaintiff, Mrs. Blyke, would be estopped from challenging the decree from Venezuela. That was, in substance, the argument.
Thank you.
So the thrust of our argument is simply this, that when we compare our instant case to the Weber case, we think the facts are even stronger in our favor because in the Weber case, Mrs. Weber signed a property settlement agreement. She would have known, at least to some extent, what the marital estate was. It's clear she didn't know everything, but at least, you know, she was living with the individual, whereas in this case, Mrs. Blyke and the defendant had already separated, and by the time the decree was handed down 2 years later, they had not lived together for over 2 years.
Does it matter, or do we care where their domicile was?
We do care where their domicile was, because I think Nebraska, and this was brought up in the Weber case, they said that they want at least one of the parties to be a good faith domiciliary. And in this case, we know that Mrs. Blyke was a native of Venezuela and that Mr. Blyke was a native of the United States. And the court talks about being a citizen on the part of Mrs. Blyke, and the court talks about Mr. Blyke having some sort of a resident card, but there really is no evidence of what we would call a good faith domiciliary.
Where does all the evidence about citizenship and whatnot come from?
I think that was mentioned in the decree. It seems like I was making notes of that. There's something about a card that he has that would indicate that he was at least a resident there, and I think that Mrs. Blyke is referred to as a citizen in the language of the decree. I went back and read that, so I'm fairly
confident. You're assuming everyone's using the language discipline in a disciplined manner.
I am.
Citizen, domiciliary, resident, and there's a short list that gets confused.
True, and all I can do is rely on the language of the decree.
Thank you.
If there are no further questions, that's all my remarks.
I have one more question.
Yes, Your Honor.
So we've got case law in Nebraska that gives us a framework for when a party can challenge the validity of a foreign decree.
Yes.
Was that procedure followed here?
In our opinion, no, it was not, because I think that the analysis would be...
You'd be the one challenging the foreign decree, though, right?
Yes.
Right, okay.
And so the argument we're making here today is the same argument we made in the lower court, is that this decree was unconscionable.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Ferguson, good morning to you.
Good morning, Justices. May it please the Court, my name is Andrew Ferguson. I'm attorney for Arlen Blyke, who's the appellee in this matter. The first thing that I think that needs to be discussed, and Mr. McCarthy touched on that, was the validity of the decree. How do we determine whether a decree from a foreign jurisdiction such as this is valid? Second of all, is it to be given full faith and credit? And I use that in terms of comedy.
Before we get to validity, what do you understand to be the basis for the district court's order of dismissal? 12b1, 12b2, 12b6, something else?
We filed a 12b motion basically stating that this court, or the lower court, excuse me, had no jurisdiction to enter an order dissolving a marriage that had already been dissolved.
Is that a jurisdictional issue? And if so, how?
I believe it is a jurisdictional issue from the standpoint that if there is no marriage, then there is no subject matter or personal jurisdiction over the parties because the marriage doesn't exist. There are simply two people who are not married coming before the court saying, give me a decree of dissolution, which you can't give because there's already one in place.
I'm getting confused, and maybe you can help me, please.
I hope so.
I think maybe Mr. MacArthur was saying a few different things in the alternative, that he's before the court saying there's a decree, but it's unconscionable. But it could be that the decree is not valid.
Well, I would argue that the decree is valid based upon the contents of the decree itself. Great pains were taken to explain why the parties were citizens of Venezuela. Great pains were taken to show that initially Mrs. Blake had an ad litem attorney, which Mr. Blake requested for her. Later on, however, she signed a power of attorney for separate attorneys to represent her. As pointed out in the decree, I think it was November of that year, she signed a power of attorney for attorneys to represent her who were barred in Venezuela. The Weber case is completely different. Mr. Weber had gone to Miami, gotten a power of attorney form from an attorney in Miami for his wife to sign. We have no idea whether or not that attorney actually ever appeared. In this case, Ms. Blake was represented by barred attorneys in Venezuela. She participated in the action by signing the power of attorney. So I don't think there's any question, and excuse me, these parties were residents of Venezuela at the time. I don't think there's any question.
Are you getting that information from the decree itself?
From the decree itself.
There was no evidence of residency at the time of the Venezuelan decree entered into evidence in this motion to dismiss, correct?
Correct, other than what's contained in the decree.
I have a question about the two dates of marriage. Same question I asked Mr. MacArthur. The record looks like they got married on March 8th, 2003 in Omaha.
Correct.
And then got married on March 11th, 2003 in Venezuela. Is that right?
I believe that's correct, yes.
And as I read the translated version of the Venezuelan decree that's in our record, it mentioned only the March 11th, 2003 marriage, and it dissolved only the March 11th, 2003 marriage. What impact, if any, does that have on our analysis?
I think that if the parties are married and the parties are divorced, the parties are divorced.
They're just... It's fluid that way. It can just apply to any old marriage.
Well, my thought would be that once the decree or the complaint for dissolution is filed, it does apply to any marriage that those parties may or may not have entered into.
You would agree that the complaint that Ms. Blake filed in Nebraska was focused exclusively on the March 8th, 2003 marriage, correct? Sought to dissolve that marriage only.
I believe that's the case. I don't have it in front of me, but I would say
if the complaint alleges that as the date of marriage, would you disagree?
I would not disagree.
And what effect does that have on our analysis?
That the parties, for better or for worse, have already been, their marriage has already been dissolved.
Is that second marriage in Venezuela of any import to us?
I believe that it is. People do these things all the time. They get their... They enter into a marriage somewhere, then they go have the destination wedding somewhere else where the documents are signed and everything
so
else in front of their witnesses.
Date of the marriage, is it the 8th?
My position is that the effective date of the marriage is March 11th of that
March
year.
March 11th?
Yes.
The second?
The second marriage.
If we disagree, if we say it's March 8th is actually the date of marriage, what difference, if any, does that make to your argument regarding the jurisdiction of the Venezuelan court?
I don't know that it makes much difference because the parties, again, were residents of Venezuela at the time that the divorce was entered into. They had jurisdiction at that point in time, and I say they, the Venezuelan court, had jurisdiction at that time to enter a dissolution of marriage.
So if there had not been a second marriage on March 11th, would Venezuela court had the jurisdiction to dissolve the March 8th marriage?
I believe they would have, under the circumstances that the parties were Venezuelan residents and citizens at the time.
But you would agree that the March 8th, 2003 marriage was not referenced or addressed at all in the Venezuelan decree?
I would agree with that, and as you pointed out, was celebrated March 11, 2003 is the only one that's referenced in the decree, which I'm looking at now.
Thank you.
Moving forward, as far as the Weber case is concerned, the other issue and the other difference between Weber and this case is glaringly obvious in the fact that in Weber, both members of that divorce were Nebraska residents. It was clearly stated in the decree they were Nebraska residents. Our laws don't allow for that. If you're a Nebraska resident, you can't run off to the Dominican and get married. I don't care how bad you want to get married, for whatever reasons. or divorced, excuse me. You can't do that. Our laws prevent that. Nothing in Nebraska statute or Nebraska law says that Venezuelan citizens can't get divorced in Venezuela. Even if they were married in Nebraska, if they were married in Venezuela, wherever the divorce, or excuse me, the marriage took place, the divorce can take place so long as comity, the rules of comity are followed. One, that it was valid under the laws of the founding jurisdiction, Venezuela in this point, and it's not offensive to the laws of the state of Nebraska.
So you're reframing this not as validity of marriage, but the validity of the divorce.
The validity of the divorce, well, the validity of the decree, which I think is completely valid, and then Mr. McCarthy's argument that the decree itself is unconscionable, and I believe that his argument that it's unconscionable is that there was no property division. I disagree. Clearly in the decree it states that Mr. Blake was kicked out of the house with nothing but a suitcase and clothes, and Ms. Blake kept everything else. Now again, I have no evidence to point to that, but that's what the court found. That's what the court put into the decree, and that would be the basis for a property division. The person raising an unconscionability issue in regard to property division should be Mr. Blake. He got nothing but a suitcase and some clothes, but he's not raising that issue. He's thought he's been divorced for the last 6 years. He doesn't want to have to go through this again. He's relying on this decree because he thinks it's valid, not unconscionable and reasonable under the circumstances.
Where the parties are contesting jurisdiction, and it's raised by a 12B1 motion in a dissolution action, which has its own requirements that to some degree differ from the procedure of our general pleading rules. Is evidence required to raise that issue above and beyond just the foreign decree?
In regard to the jurisdictional issue?
Yes.
I don't believe it is, simply because the foreign decree itself contains all the elements necessary to show that this decree would have been valid in the United States. And I say that from the standpoint of Nebraska allows service by publication. Now, if there's children involved, obviously that's not the case. You can't find custody issues when service by publication is made. The parties can be divorced and a property division can be made.
I don't remember seeing in any of the briefing any references to any treaties between the United States and Venezuela that might touch on this issue.
There were none that I could find.
All right. Thank you.
As far as Mr. Now I want to look down. Oh, the other thing that I do want to discuss just briefly is an equitable argument that we did make in our brief, in that the Weber case came forward in the Dominican in January of 1975. Mrs. Weber came back to the United States and said, what happened here? I'm going to go see an attorney 8 months later. 6 years is way too long for somebody to wait to then challenge the validity of this decree.
So it's an equitable estoppel defense that you're raising to the challenge to the validity of the decree. Is that correct?
That's one of our challenges, correct.
And is that an affirmative defense?
I'm
a little confused by the procedure and how I understand the eagerness of the parties to get to the issue of, is that Venezuelan decree valid? I understand that, but I don't quite understand how it became the central issue in a motion to dismiss based on 12B1, 12B2, and 12B6.
Well, I think Mr. MacArthur was correct when he said it became the central issue when we said the lower court, did not have jurisdiction because a decree of dissolution had already been entered. There were other defenses, like the collateral estoppel defense that we asserted based upon the equity principles of equity, that she waited 6 years to challenge this. You can't simply wait 6 years to
see. How is that a matter that bears on either subject matter jurisdiction, personal jurisdiction, or whether the face of the complaint states a plausible claim?
I don't know that it does, except for the fact that it's a separate issue that can be
raised as an affirmative defense.
Raised as a defense.
Was it raised a little early here?
I don't think so, because we said the decree was not valid a Consequently, I think we can raise all of our defenses in that motion to dismiss. If there are no other questions, that's all I have. Thank you. I'm out of time.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor.
There is no time for rebuttal. That concludes arguments in Blight versus Blight. Counsel, you are excused. And the court will go on to the next case of the day, which is 132 Ventures LLC versus Active Spine Physical Therapy LLC. Justice Miller Lerman is recused from this matter, and the court will be joined by Judge Ryan Post.